The following episode of Annals on Call is brought to you by Annals of Internal Medicine. The views and opinions expressed by the hosts and participants during this episode are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of the American College of Physicians, the editors of Annals of Internal Medicine, or the institutions that the speakers are affiliated with unless so identified. All relevant financial relationships have been mitigated. Information contained herein should never be used as a substitute for clinical judgment. For more episodes, links to CME and MOC, or to view disclosures, visit go.annals.org/oncall.
GLP-1 for weight loss is the primary cause, and all those patients reported severe vomiting, malnutrition, and excessive weight loss beyond the expected one.
Welcome to Annals on Call, a podcast based upon articles from the Annals of Internal Medicine, in which we discuss the implications of the article for you, the listener. This is Dr. Bob Centaur. I'm Professor Emeritus at the University of Alabama at Birmingham and former Chair of the Board of Regents for the American College of Physicians.
This episode of Annals on Call uses three articles from the Annals of Internal Medicine. The first is Efficacy and Safety of Glucagon-like Peptide 1 Receptor Agonists for Weight Loss Among Adults Without Diabetes, a Systematic Review of Randomized Controlled Trials. The second is Gastrointestinal Beriberi, a Previously Unrecognized Syndrome. And the final one, The Skinny on a Growing Problem, Dry Beriberi After Bariatric Surgery. Joining us on this podcast is Dr. Adam Goldman, who's an epidemiological researcher and lecturer at Tel Aviv University's School of Public Health and Faculty of Medicine, as well as a fellow in the Institute of Sheba Hospital in the Department of Gastroenterology with a specialty in internal medicine. I believe you're going to learn quite a bit about thiamine deficiencies in people who are not the traditional alcohol use disorder patients that we sometimes think of. Thank you for listening to our podcast.
Adam, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast.
Thanks for the invitation.
I've been fascinated with thiamine deficiency, especially over the last 5 to 10 years. For years, we always associate thiamine deficiency with alcohol use disorder. And we certainly see much of that in the United States. But I've had two very interesting cases that I've heard recently. One was one that I had myself, where a gentleman on dialysis who came with severe abdominal pain, nausea and vomiting, to the point where he was admitted to the hospital about 5 times. Because of the symptoms, we suspected that he might have GI beriberi, and we documented that he did. The case was actually written up in the New York Times, and his symptoms all got better with large doses of thiamine. And that apparently happened because dialysis is a risk factor for decreasing thiamine intake. More recently, I was at a patient conference, where a patient had lost quite a bit of weight on GLP-1s and came in with neurological findings, neuropathies, etc. And it was documented that she had no thiamine in her system, and it was all due to the GLP-1s. And I know that you've been interested in that particular combination recently. As I did research on it, I saw that bariatric surgery patients, that was well known to cause a problem with thiamine deficiency. But maybe you could talk a little bit more about the GLP-1s, and then maybe we can talk about some of the other reasons that people get thiamine deficiency.
Yes, so that's extremely interesting because it's very similar to our case, which prompt us to the current paper that we have published, as we encountered a challenging case of a patient with various neurological symptoms who had been using GLP-1 receptor agonist also. And he experienced severe loss of weight and vomiting. And after we ruled out other causes, And eventually we found the low serum thiamine levels. We diagnosed Wernicke encephalopathy. So following this case, we've evaluated whether GLP-1 receptor agonists are indeed associated with Wernicke encephalopathy. So we analyzed the FDA adverse event reporting system, which is a global post-marketing surveillance program. And the purpose of the study was to identify additional cases, because until our study, there was only one case in the scientific literature. And we found certain cases in the that were reported to the FDA Adverse Event Reporting System, the FAERS, between 2014 and 2024. So it summed up to 15 cases. And that was extremely interesting to see that all of these patients were reported in the last 1 or 2 years since 2023, although the medications are already approved for more than a decade. So we do think that the current use of GLP-1 for weight loss is the primary cause, with the, and all those patients reported severe vomiting or malnutrition and excessive weight loss beyond the expected one.
Really, really fascinating in a lot of different ways. And I know that there was an older literature on bariatric surgery patients getting thiamine deficiency. I've been very fascinated by the GI beriberi, which was first described actually in the Annals of Internal Medicine. And I'm wondering whether or not you have nausea and vomiting, you get some mild thiamine deficiency, you then get, it's exacerbated by the GI beriberi. And then this the patient that I heard the presentation, when they actually measured the thiamine level, it was undetectable. And now the patient was not eating well, was everything that you just described. I'm sure you've thought about this a whole lot. Is it the GLP-1 that starts this? Is it the thiamine that continues it? And how does this relate to other patients that we should be thinking about thiamine deficiency in?
Well, exactly. I think these are two important points, because the first one is that with the treatment of GLP-1, you can enter a vicious cycle that the GLP-1 causes GI toxicity, and after vomiting, if you develop the thiamine deficiency, that can start the gastrointestinal beriberi, which exacerbate the vomiting and may lead to more severe thiamine deficiency. So this vicious cycle can exacerbate the deficiency. And the second important point to understand is that the half-life time of thiamine is roughly 20 days. And there are limited storage of thiamine in the body. So thiamine deficiency can be developed as fast as 3 weeks. So symptoms of vomiting for several weeks can definitely cause severe thiamine deficiency and can lead to Wernicke encephalopathy.
Yeah, so it's interesting that the Wernicke's encephalopathy, as I understand it, and you may know more than I do, that many of those patients also have the GI symptoms. That they're, we always think about Wernicke's and we think about neuropathies, but if you go back and read the Wernicke's literature significantly, they also often have abdominal pain, nausea, and vomiting as part of that syndrome. I think that was never taught to me. And now if anytime I see someone who has nausea and vomiting and altered mental status, I'm going to think of this. Is that sound reasonable?
Yes, that's very reasonable, especially in our era of thiamine deficiency in the context of bariatric surgeries and GLP-1 receptor agonist, because again, in our study of 15 cases of Wernicke encephalopathy following GLP-1 treatment, almost all of them reported vomiting and excessive weight loss. So that's totally should be connected and should be alert the physician that it might be in the differential.
So when I have been thinking about this and reading about this, We always knew about hyperemesis gravidarum, that occasionally you'll see pregnant women develop thiamine deficiency because they have such bad vomiting, especially in the first trimester. I was not aware, and when I did some study on this, that parenteral nutrition, that you have to be real careful when you're doing parenteral nutrition to make sure they also get thiamine.
Yeah, that's another important point. That's right, yes.
And when we're treating malignancy patients, a lot of times they have decreased, anybody who has decreased intake, anybody who has refeeding syndrome. You know, I always think about refeeding syndrome. There are a lot of things that I thought about, but thiamine was not one of the things I was thinking about.
Yeah.
But you use up so much thiamine when you reintroduce carbohydrates. And I actually am very familiar with someone who recently had a stem cell transplant, and they were very concerned about her getting enough thiamine because it's essentially a refeeding syndrome when you get like a stem cell transplant. So they're giving her plenty of thiamine. And I heard one other case recently that they thought that a significant part was chronic loop diuretics. And so we have the problem of someone who has heart failure who are trying to aggressively treat with loop diuretics, but if we give them too much loop diuretics and they're not eating well, they're gonna pee out a lot of thiamine. And so we can lose thiamine in a lot of different ways. And I don't know what your experience has been with other types of patients who get thiamine deficiency.
Well, I fully agree with you. As you said, I think that one of the main points is to understand that thiamine deficiency and its complications are not limited to people with excessive alcohol use. And also in the past, there have been several studies that have tried to investigate thiamine treatment to patients with severe heart failure with the diuretics. And some of them indeed demonstrated benefits. So that's definitely another aspect of thiamine deficiency.
So that really brings up, so we talked about the neurological symptoms. We could also call that dry beriberi. That includes Wernicke's and includes neuropathies. We talked about GI beriberi, which is fairly new concept. My patient did not have neurological findings, only had the GI beriberi, but it seems to overlap with Wernicke's, as I understand it. And it sounds like it did in your patient. And then there's the cardiac beriberi, wet beriberi. And the point that you just made, I think, is really, really important in that someone who's on heart failure and is on high dose loop diuretics and their heart failure is getting worse, we need to consider the possibility of thiamine deficiency. So we have a lot of internists who listen to this podcast, both inpatient and outpatient physicians. So what would you tell them about when to think about thiamine deficiency? So you just have a patient that you're following in your office or a patient gets admitted to your service in the hospital. What are the key symptoms? I like to call them the red flags, that if they report this symptom or obviously have these symptoms, I need to think about the possibility of thiamine deficiency.
Yes, so I think that's what is the most important is to understand that the classic triad of symptoms, which consist of neurological deficits, ataxia, and ophthalmoplegia, is usually not exist in most of the patients. Most of the patients do not present this classic triad, and therefore the cases are always challenging for diagnosis. As I heard from your case, and it was the same in our case, it took time to diagnose the patient, and the problem is that this time may subject them to additional risk to develop the long-term neurological disorders termed Korsakoff syndrome. So I think that in every patient that has the combination of gastrointestinal malabsorption, weight loss that is dramatic, or vomiting with any non-specific neurological symptoms that are new and there is no evident cause for these symptoms, it warrants clinician awareness for this possibility. and maybe even to start with a with high clinical suspicion, you can already start the empirical treatment because the treatment is safe. And until you will have the diagnosis, which may take time because the laboratory results can take time to validate and they're not always accurate. So I think that, as you mentioned, the combination of GI symptoms with non-specific neurological symptoms that has no other evident etiology should raise this suspicion.
And in your patient, how did you, how much thiamine did you give?
So our patient was hospitalized for more than a week, and it took, I think, several days to start the thiamine treatment. At the beginning, we started with full workup, including MRI, imaging of the brain, and of course, laboratory test. And also the historical, the part of the GLP-1 use was not known at the beginning because it was used without prescription. So that's another problem that became common in the last year, because many patients can take it without a prescription and therefore without monitoring and without clinician that knows about that and document the treatment. And so that's also another important point, to take the full history from the patient. And after that, we have started empirical treatment, and the laboratory results that validated the very low thiamine serum level came back only 2 weeks later.
So there's been a debate over the last several years about how much thiamine to give, and does it need to be IV? Does it need to be oral? What is your understanding?
Okay, that's true. And it should also be clarified that usually we think about thiamine as 100 milligram, but this is only the preventive dose, because if we suspect that Wernicke encephalopathy, which can develop only when there is a severe deficiency, we should start the evidence-based protocol, which is 50 and 500 milligram IV route administration per day for the first days, two or three first days, and then step down to 250 milligram per day for additional 5 days. So this is this protocol, the evidence-based protocol, and that's the treatment dose that we know that should be treated in the first days.
Okay, all my recent reading agrees with that 100%. I love the way you framed all that. So if you suspect it, you go ahead and give strong doses of thiamine, but it has to be IV because it's not really well-absorbed thiamine when we give it orally. And certainly if we have someone who we think may have nausea and vomiting, we may try to give them thiamine ahead of time. But once they're having anything that might be a symptom, and I think that's really important. What would you tell your primary care physicians and your hospitalists about GLP-1s and thiamine deficiency? So let's say you have a relative. Let's say you have a relative who's losing weight and you think they might be taking a GLP-1. What would you tell them?
Okay, so I think I will start from the basic fact that GLP-1 receptor agonists are important medications that have demonstrated important clinical benefits, because many patients ask me about them since our publication, and they have varied clinical benefits for metabolic syndrome particularly. So this should be said. And the Wernicke encephalopathy complication is relatively rare. We think that it might be associated with 1 per 1,000 or more patients, similarly to bariatric surgeries. So that's for the beginning. But if you have a patient that is with massive vomiting, with persistent vomiting more than the usual mild gastrointestinal toxicities, so first thing is to take already the blood levels of thiamine, and then to monitor him. And if the first neurological symptoms present, so I think that's the time point to consider starting treatment with empirical thiamine.
Do you think it's worthwhile when patients start a GLP-1 and for weight loss? Because that seems to be, I know a lot of people who are taking GLP-1s for weight loss. Should they take a multivitamin that has thiamine in it? Should they just be taking the thiamine ahead of time just to be safe?
So that's a big question. Unfortunately, I don't think that we have an evidence-based answer right now. But given that thiamine is safe, I think that we can be on the safe side and take thiamine. It probably won't make any damage. But currently, we are working on prospective studies that will help to develop these treatment protocols similarly to the protocols that we have with bariatric surgeries. That is a high priority right now. And we think that the professional societies should consider that with a routine pre-treatment monitoring of thiamine level, or at least among those who are high risk, and then to be able to study that in an evidence-based way, and maybe to consider, as you said, multivitamin or prophylactic treatment, at least with the 100 milligram dose.
Adam, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast. I think that the bottom line, which you said very clearly, is that once the idea of thiamine deficiency is in your differential, and especially when you have neurological symptoms, and it may be also if heart failure got worse, to go ahead and if you want to document it, go ahead and get a thiamine level. Some people would say just treat them and see if they get better. But to treat aggressively with IV thiamine, and you mentioned 500 three times a day for 2 or 3 days, and then go down to 250 a day for several more days. I think that's really important that we think about thiamine deficiency more than we've been thinking about it. And my guess is that after you diagnose this patient, the thought of thiamine deficiency is something that has become something that you think about a lot.
That's right. Thank you, Professor Santo. I fully agree.
Now it's time for Bob's Pearls. This wide-ranging discussion of thiamine deficiency in people who do not have alcohol use disorder raises several very important points in 2026. The first is an increasing awareness that GLP-1s may cause thiamine deficiency in a small number of patients. And the patients that I'm aware of who've had this, they start out with the routine GI symptoms, and then they get worse with more severe nausea and vomiting. This is really a description of GI beriberi and can be a way to help treat these patients, but it can be very, very serious, as it was in a patient that I heard about who actually had significant Wernicke's encephalopathy. We also discussed the problem of high-dose loop diuretics worsening heart failure with wet beriberi. We discussed bariatric surgery as a cause of Wernicke's encephalopathy. And I always think about patients who just aren't eating well, a lot of times cancer patients who come in cachectic, that thiamine deficiency could be part of their differential. I hope our discussion has been interesting to you and perhaps make you think about a possible diagnosis in patients in whom you're confused. Thank you for listening to our podcast.
Information contained herein should never be used as a substitute for clinical judgment. For more episodes, links to CME and MOC, or to view disclosures, visit go.annals.org/oncall